Blog Talk Radio.
This one goes out to my little homie Brandon. Told you, I got you, my man.
A lot of pressure, man. Let's go, baby. Sophisticated gorillas is on the move tonight. VA, stand up. Come on. Come on. Come on. 100 miles of running. With guns in our hand. Barbarian, heavy metal, carrying rock band. Investing in stock, man. Testing the clock, grand. My peeps got a spot on the block of our block, fam. A jar in the pot, man. Gets you a knot, man. Like ching ching. Hot damn. Cooked it like hot ham. Gotta be smart, man. Playing your part, man. Get your feelings apart. With ice over your heart, man. Hustling ain't a game. Hustling the art, man. 50% sour, 50% smart, man. And lame as turns ain't shit sweet. Life gets cheap once plans gets brief. Be your own piece trying to treat. Acting like they ain't get their chance to eat. The politicians, they say we valid in the street. But they the ones who put their face behind the white sheet. With holes in it. Life is a picture, baby, I posed in it. So my attitude is go get it. Cause I come from a place that's colder than a jail cell with snow in it. So I don't need your E-pill, I'm already rolling. I don't need your weed, I'm already flowing. I don't blow the white girl, I got the white girl blowing. Who needs to get used up? I'm lyrically flowing. I don't need your shine, I'm already glowing. I don't need your nine, boy, I'm already toting. It's one last thing that you rappers should be knowing. I impregnated the game, man, she just ain't showing. My man, I'ma back off it, duh. Get that thing some air, yeah. Know why? Cause I swam with the sharks, ran with the bulls, flown with the vultures, and hunted with the wolves. Swam with the sharks, ran with the bulls, flown with the vultures, and hunted with the wolves. I done swam with the sharks, I done ran with the bulls, I done flown with the vultures, I'm hunting with the wolves. I swam with the sharks, I ran with the bulls, I flown with the vultures, I'm hunting with the wolves. My man, I'ma back off it, duh. Get that thing some air. Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's 10:06. It's Tuesday night. And when I, you know what we do is sound off the drums. I'm your host. I would like to thank y'all for tuning in tonight. Tonight I got a new setup going on, so if nothing happens, please continue. I'm trying to get to thank y'all. We once again up to 7,000 listeners. We are doing things. We're doing our thing on the forum. We're doing fastest growing shows on Blog Talk Radio, and I thank y'all for doing it. So as I get started, I'm going to start like what I usually do. To you that you can find me on Facebook at george.mango.904. Go get me a hashtag soundoff97413. You also can call in 991014. Tonight we're supposed to have a guest, and our guest once again that flu or whatever is going around is catching everybody. I will start on the Lincoln Douglas debate and things we're trying to do, and I will let him when he to do that. So as I always do it, on Ephesians 6, and it says, 6:13, King James Version, it says, not with eye service as man pleases, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from heart, with good will doing service as the Lord, and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good things any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether it be bond free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them. Neither in the respect of the person with him. Finally, my brothers, be strong in the Lord. Be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that ye may stand not against flesh and blood, but against principalities. Against powers, against rulers of darkness in this world, against spiritual wicked things in high places. Whether it takes take upon the whole armor of God, that ye be able to stand in the evil day, and having all done to stand. That's saying. So I need you to give me a second. I'm ready.
New Orleans, Sonny Patterson.
So I'm from a stock that pitch cocktail bombs and hand grenades. We pour cayenne pepper around the perimeter of a building to keep the police dogs at bay. I'm the Panther Party in the Desire Housing Projects in New Orleans. I'm a nigga turning the gun on the National Guards. Take a long, long look. I'm a cook in the kitchen asking the missus to taste the dinner. Take a long, long sip, because death ain't always this good. It's eyes popping out their sockets. It's a lifeless body rocking backwards and forwards. It's a boy's stabbed 47 times in front of church house. It's a man 43 years old stuffing his penis in a 9-year-old girl's mouth. No, death don't always taste good. Just don't sound like something I want to eat often. I hear them say it was like a train came through the room, left mama so depressed she was unable to move until one day, a few months after the hurricane. Husband and child found the Trinity bloody in bed, his wife, son, other daughter dead, and on the end table there was a letter that read, I couldn't stay here, not for 1 minute longer, and it made no sense for me to leave here alone, because who would take care of my babies with their mama gone? I'm telling you, death ain't always good. It'll leave you finning for water and food. It'll riddle up your body in an Audubon ballroom. They'll air high Hajj Malik El Shabazz you, crown you king, then dethrone you in a Lorraine hotel. They'll disfigure your body to where folk can't tell if you Emmett Till or not. Tell them, mama, keep that casket open. Let all the world see it ain't just burning in Mississippi. Hell is hot wherever you be, from the rooftop to the cell block. Step on up to the auction block, bend over, touch your toes, so show your teeth, lift her titties, examine his balls. It damn near sound like a hip-hop song, but it's slavery at its peak. A circus for all the freaks, they'll warn you, caution when you speak. Can't afford the truth to leak, but we'll say blessed are the meek, and all the ones who make peace, and all the ones who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. For we say theirs is the kingdom, earth is their inheritance. So no matter how treacherous, they'll try to trap us in them trenches, they'll dig deeper ditches, but all that matters is this: which side will we pick, which path will we choose, either win or lose? Cause death don't come in vain, not for us to remain enslaved or our spirits to remain in cages. It comes so we might be courageous to fulfill our obligation to our God and all creation, and stand in determination, able to look death in the face and say, we made it, we made it, we made it, we made it.
Sonny Patterson, y'all.
So, hello, I'd like to say welcome to Sound Off Forums. And I was going through some technical difficulties. I got the chat room up. If you'd like to come in, that'd be good to go. So I'll get started. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Lincoln-Douglas debate. Now, some of you people have gotten to an argument because life's about discussions and having conversations. And tonight's very, very... very near and dear to my heart, because I learned that in Lincoln Douglas debate that you are able to do certain things in life with these skills. So how do we go about doing this? Well, we go about doing this in a debate type fashion. And in a debate type fashion, sometimes we get very what we call opinionated, or very vocal about our beliefs and where we stand. And so what we are taught is if you believe in something, you don't back down. Well, most people who don't back down don't understand that they are not using the most important thing that we as human beings need to access and learn, and that is to listen. Because if you do not listen to your opponent or to the person that you're speaking with, then literally you're not having a conversation, you're not having a debate, because you're always formulating ideas. Some people can do things at the same time, these skills that we learn are things that we need to grasp and try to understand. Okay, I've got this from, it's called skillsyouneed.co.uk. Listening skills. It says listening is the ability to accurately receive messages in the communication process. Listening is the key to all effective communication. Without the ability to listen effectively, messages are easily misunderstood, communication breaks down, and the sender of the message can easily become frustrated or irritated. Listening is so important that many top employers give regular listening skill trainings for their employees. It is not surprising
when you consider that good listening skills can lead to better customer service satisfaction, greater productive and fewer mistakes, increase of sharing information that will turn can lead to more creative and effective work. Okay? Good listening skills also have the benefits in some personal lives, including a greater number of friends and social networks, improve of self-esteem and confidence, higher grades of academic work, and increased health and well-being. Studies have shown that whereas speaking rises blood pressure, listening brings it down. Hearing refers to the sounds that you hear, whereas listening requires more than that. It requires focus. Listening means paying attention not only to the story, but how it is told, the use of the language and the voice, and how the other person uses his or her body. In other words, it means being aware of both verbal and nonverbal messages. Your ability to listen effectively depends on your degree in which you perceive and understand the message. So now that I have explained to you and this is coming out of interpersonal professional skills. Now that we have, I've cleaned up the air about listening and about having the discussion, I want to tell you about where debating not necessarily comes from, but when we talk about LD or Lincoln Douglas debate in high school, or you hear about debating in high school and all these things, it comes from Abraham Lincoln, and Stephen Douglas, okay? They were both senators. So I'll give you a little background on this, okay? Lincoln Douglas' debate happened in 1858, where a series of seven debates between Abraham Lincoln, the Republican candidate for the Senate in Illinois, and the Senator Stephen Douglas, a Democratic Party candidate. At the time, the U.S. Senate was elected by the state legislature. Lincoln and Douglas were trying to their respective parties to win control of the Illinois legislature. The debate preview in the issues of that Lincoln was facing in the aftermath of his victory in 1860 presidential election. The main issue discussed in all seven debates were slavery. In agreeing to debate, Lincoln and Douglas decided to hold one debate in each of the nine congressional districts in Illinois. Because both have already spoken in two, Springfield and Chicago, within days of each other, they decided that they should join appearances would be held only in the remaining seven districts. The debate was held in seven towns in the state of Illinois: Iowa, August 21st, Freeport, August 27th, Jonesboro, September 15th, Charleston, September 18th, Glassburg, October 7th, Quincy, October 13th, Alton, on October 15th. The debates in Freeport, Quincy, and Alton drew especially large numbers of people from neighboring states, as the issues of slavery was monumentally important to the citizens across the nation. Newspapers covered the debate was intense. Majority papers from Chicago sent stenographers to create complete texts of each debate, and newspapers across the United States reprinted it in full with some partial editations. Newspapers that supported Douglas edited his speeches to remove any errors made by the stenographer and to correct grammatical errors while they left Lincoln's speech in rough form in which they have been translated. In the same way, pro-Lincoln papers edited Lincoln's speeches, but left Douglas, Texas, as reported. Now, I say to you this. Now, as we know, all the things that people put on TV or media, it's only to gratify or edify whatever side they chose to do. Okay? So we got right now, you look at today's modern papers. I don't read a lot of newspapers because a lot of the hoopla they put in it, and it's so biased. Either it's going to be full right or it's going to be full left, just as they're reporting. Okay? After losing the election for the Senate in Illinois, Lincoln edited the texts of all his debates and had them published in a book. The widespread coverage of the original debates and the subsequently popular of his book led eventually to Lincoln's nomination for President of the United States by 1860, the Republican Nomination Convention in Chicago. Now, as you know, President Lincoln now, if you're following, President Lincoln was a Republican, okay? Republicans weren't the same as the public Republicans of nowadays Republicans, okay? They've kind of switched in their radicalness of thinking, okay? We'll talk about that another day. The format for each debate was one candidate spoke for 60 seconds, then the other candidate spoke for 90 seconds. Excuse me, 60 minutes, then the other candidate spoke for 90 minutes. And then the first candidate was allowed a 30-minute rejoinder. The candidate alternated speech first. As an incumbent, Douglas spoke first in four of the debates. Now, let's talk about the debates themselves, okay? The main theme of the Lincoln-Douglas debate, like I said, was slavery. And partly of the issues of slavery was the expansion into the territories. Now, if you go and look back at my old archives, and we were talking about manifest destiny, and we were talking about how the West expansion affected the slavery movement, and where have we gone from there? I talked about that. So I'm just going to reiterate and drive home a point on this one. And like I said, slavery was about the Civil War was about slavery, but it really wasn't about slavery. It was about the expansion of the Western and how can we get commerce or how can we get products to the West. Okay, and so it's always about the railroads. It's always about the railroads. Okay, so it was Douglas Kansas Nebraska Act. And I'll tell you what that is in a second, that repealed the Missouri Commission that banned slavery in the territories of Kansas and Nebraska and replaced it with a doctrine called popular sovereignty. Very important, people, that you listen to this, okay? So I'll give you a quick synopsis of what the Kansas-Nebraska Act was. It happened in 1854 created by the territories of Kansas and Nebraska, opening new lands for settlement, and has the effect of repelling the Missouri conception of 1820. Okay, so let me go to that so everybody can understand what I'm talking about. Okay. The Missouri conception was passed in 1820 between the pro-slavery and the non-slavery factions in the United States Congress, involving primarily the regulation of slavery in the Western territories. It prohibited slavery in the former Louisiana territories. If you don't know what that is, you got to look up the Louisiana Purchase and what the Louisiana Purchase was, okay? I can talk about it. I love Louisiana. We was one of the largest territories that were in America, but that's not for today. Okay, so the Louisiana Territory north of the parallel 36 degrees and 30 north, except within the boundaries of the proposed state of Missouri to balance the number of slave states and free states. The northern region of what was now Massachusetts, was then Massachusetts, was admitted into the United States as a free state to become Maine. Prior to an agreement, the House of Representatives has refused to accept this concept, and the conference committee was appointed. So I'm not going to read the whole thing, but you get an understanding that there were what they wanted to do was have a balance between free pro states and anti-slavery states. So they wanted to make it balanced. So the Kansas-Nebraska Act was the settlers of the territories to determine the popular sovereignty, whether they were all allowed slavery within these territories. And the act, designed by the Democrat Senator Stephen A. Douglas of Illinois, the initial purpose of the Kansas-Nebraska Act was to open up many thousands of new farms and make feasible a Midwestern transatlantic railroad. It became problematic that the popular sovereignty was written into the proposal so that the voters of the moment would decide whether slavery would be allowed. The result of pro-slavery, anti-slavery elements flooded into Kansas, and the goal was voting slavery up or down, leading to a bloody civil war there. Okay, so let me tell you what the popular sovereignty means. Popular sovereignty are the sovereignty of the people is the principle that the authority of the government is created and sustained by the consensus of its people, who has the source of all political power. It is closely associated to republicanism and social contract. Philosophers such as Thomas Hobbes, John Locke, Rousseau, popular sovereignty expresses the concept and does not necessarily reflect or describes the political reality. It is the contrast of the concept of parliamentary sovereignty, which is the individual sovereignty. Benjamin Franklin expressed the concept when he wrote, "In free governments, the rulers are the servants and the people their superiors and their sovereignties." Okay, so remember with these names: John Hobbes, John Locke, John Rousseau, Benjamin Franklin. These are the names that I brought up yesterday when we were talking about how these people decided to take on their own identities, okay, and not go by religion, but go on what man decided to go on, and that was in the Enlightenment age, okay. So let's go back to it, and it says that Douglas argued that both Whigs and Democrats believe in the popular sovereignty and that the conception of the 1850 was the example of this. Lincoln said that the national policy was to limit the spread of slavery and to maintain both at Jonesboro and later in Cooper Union Address. In the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, which banned slavery from a large part of the modern-day Midwest, for example, of these policies, the conception of 1850 allowed the territories of Utah and New Mexico to decide for or against slavery. But it was also allowed to admit mission of California as a free state, reduce the size of slave states to Texas by adjusting the boundaries, and the end of slave trade, but not slavery itself in the District of Columbia. So I can go on and on and on and on and on. But what I want you guys to understand is the debate itself, like I said, was about slavery. And the reason why Lincoln and Douglas wanted to do that is because they were both running for presidency. And as you see, Lincoln lost all the debates, almost all of them. He only won two. Okay? He only won two. So this is what I want to bring up, though. Douglas also charged Lincoln with opposing the Dred Scott decision. Let me tell you who Dred Scott is, okay? This black man, okay, he is black. This was called Dred Scott versus the Sanford case in 60 U.S. 393 of 1859, also known as the Dred Scott decision, was a landmark decision by the Supreme Court. It was held at a federal government had no power to regulate slavery into territories, and that people of African descent, both free and slave, were not protected by the Constitution and were not U.S. citizens. Since the passage of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution, the decision has not been a precedent case, but retains the historical significance as it is widely regarded as the worst decision ever made by the Supreme Court. Okay, there you go. So that's what Abraham Lincoln was, he said, Douglas also charged Lincoln with opposing the Dred Scott decision because it derives the Negro of the rights and privileges of citizenship. Lincoln responded that the next Scott-Dred decision could allow slavery to spread into free states. Douglas accused Lincoln of wanting to overthrow states' laws that excluded blacks from the states, such as Illinois, which were popular with the Northern Democrats. Lincoln did not argue for complete social equality. However, he did say that Douglas' ignorance of base humanity of blacks and that slaves did not have equal rights to liberty, as Lincoln said. So everybody who wants to give praise to Abraham Lincoln, okay, everybody want to celebrate Abraham Lincoln and Emancipation Proclamation, his first inkling was not to even give blacks equal rights. He says this declared indifference, but as I must think, convert size zeal for the spread of slavery, I cannot be but hate. I hate it because of the monstrous injustice of slavery itself. I hate it because it derives our Republican experience of its just influence into the world. Enabling the enemies of free institutions with plausibility to tolerate us of the hypocrisies. Causing the real friends of freedom to doubt our sincerity, and especially because it forces so many real good men among ourselves into our open war that is a very fundamental principle of civil liberty. Criticizing the Declaration of Independence and insisting that there is no right principle of the action by self-interest. A lot of stuff in here. You guys got to read this for yourself because it's just so good. Now let's get a little background of Abraham Lincoln. Let's skip Abraham and come back to him. Okay, let's get to the man himself, and find out who exactly is Stephen A. Douglas. Stephen Arnold Douglas was born April 23rd, 1813, and died June 3rd, 1861. He was an American politician in Illinois. He was a U.S. senator, representative, and a U.S. senator, and the Democratic Party nominee for president in 1860, losing to the Republican Abraham Lincoln. Douglas has previously defeated Lincoln in the Senate contest, noted that the famous Lincoln-Douglas debate in 1858. He had a nickname, Little Giant, because he was short in the physical stature and the force of dominant force in politics. He was born in Brandon, Vermont, and he married Sarah Frisk, and Douglas dropped his second S in his name after a few years. He migrated to Winchester, Illinois in 1833, where he settled with an intern teacher and opened a school for 3 months at $3 a pupil. He also studied law and settled in Jacksonville, Illinois by the end of the year. He wrote his Vermont relatives, "I have been a Western man, have endebted Western feelings, principles, and interests, and have settled in Illinois as a favorite place of my adoption." He was married to Mary Todd. He briefly courted Mary Todd, who eventually married Abraham Lincoln. Kind of weird, isn't it? Douglas was also a member of the Masonic fraternity of the Springfield Lodge of Number 4, Springfield, Illinois, 1839. He also was a member of several Masonic organizations in Springfield. He married Martha Martin, a 21-year-old wealthy colonel's daughter. After he's married, their father died, and then they inherited 2,500 acres of cotton plantations and 100 slaves off the Pearl River of Mississippi. He appointed Douglas the property manager, and he became the senator of the Free State, as I said. Let's see. As his career grew, he did some attorney work. He was a state attorney in 1834 and served until 1836. He also led the dominant Illinois Democrats and was, like I said, he was elected. He also he was registered with the landowners back then. He also was a champion territory expansion and supporting the Mexican War when he was in the Senate. Let's see. He's also known for the Kansas-Nebraska Act of 1854, and he also was known for the Lincoln-Douglas debate. Let's see. Douglas denounced secession as a criminal. He also was one of the most advocate of maintaining integrity of the Union of all heresy. After the bombardment of Fort Sumter, Lincoln decided to proclaim a state of rebellion and called for 75,000 troops to suppress it, and Douglas looked over the proclamation because it was issued and endorsed incompletely. He suggested only one change. Lincoln should call for 200,000 troops, not 75,000 troops. You do not know the dishonor possibilities of those men that you're dealing with. Okay, so he supported them after the fall of the Civil War. And let's see, what kind of... I won't go over his awards. Okay, so that's a little bit about him. So let's go over about Mr. Lincoln. I mean, we know a little bit about Lincoln, and we know what he did. His early childhood, he was born February 12, 1809. He was the second child to Thomas Lincoln and Nancy Lincoln. They live in a one-room log cabin in Spring Farm in Hardin County, Kentucky. He was descended from Samuel Lincoln, who arrived in Hangingham, Massachusetts, and Folk, New England in 17th century. Lincoln's predominant grandfather and naysay, Abraham, also moved his family from Virginia to Kentucky, where he was ambushed and killed in an Indian raid in 1786. Let's see. His family moved across the Ohio River to a free territory, and they had a new start, where Lincoln then noted that he had to move in a particular account of slavery, but mainly due to the land title disagreement. Lincoln's mother died His older sister, Sarah, took charge of caring for him until his father remarried in 1819. Sarah later died in her 20s by giving childbirth to a stillborn baby. Let's see. Mr. Lincoln became very interested in distance from his father when he became his father. It was lack of education while the young Lincoln former education consisted approximately 1 year worth of classes for several intended teachers. He also was a self-educated and was self-advocated reader and often sorted out access to new books in the village. That's Mr. Lincoln. He then, he married Miss Mary Todd in 1840 in Lexington, Kentucky, who was a wealthy slave owner, and her family had slaves. The couple bought a house in Springfield near Lincoln's law office. She kept Lincoln's house and offered to help in relations or to hire a servant girl. Early in the years, and he served in the militia. In 1838, at 23, Lincoln was a partner that bought a small general store on credit from New Salem in Illinois. Although the economics was booming in the region, the business struggled, and Lincoln eventually sold his share. And that March, he became a political career in his first campaign for Illinois General Assembly. Before the election, Lincoln served as a captain in the Illinois militia during the Black Hawk War. Following his return, Lincoln continued his campaign for the August 6th election in the Illinois General Assembly. At 6'4", he was tall and strong enough to intimidate any rival at his first speech, and he supported the crowd during the attacks. So now we know you can go do your research on Abraham Lincoln and what he did and what a great man he was and all this stuff, okay? So now what I want to do is turn it to L&D debates, okay? L&D debates are very interesting for a couple of reasons. If you've never sat in a Lincoln Douglas debate, there's a lot of things you need to know about debating before you think you know how to debate. Because like I said before at the beginning of it, you think you know how to debate, but you really don't. There's a lot of research that you've got to do depending on the topics. Now, the topics can range from anything. And then within the topic, there's subtopics that you have to defend because we use those, when I say we, because I was a debater, we use those keywords to manipulate the judges in order to see our side. So if you say that you don't believe in slavery, but you use a word like popularity sovereignty, then it gets a little confusing because what I explain to people about popularity sovereignty, it is the people who makes the decision who has the electoral power, the electioning power. So when you have that, the people are making that. So if the slaves are not citizens, then they have no say so in that electing power. Okay? So let me give you a little background about Lincoln Douglas' debate. Okay? It is called Value is Values debate because it is traditionally placed on a heavy emphasis on logic, ethical values, and philosophies. It is a type of American high school 101 debate practiced in the National Forensic League, which is the NFL competition, and widely used in related debating leagues such as, I'm not going to go through those things. But in high school speech and debate, it is for credit class and in a tournament and hold on the weekends, but they are supplemented by the classes and training with them often in their curriculum. In other areas, debate may be a school-supported team similar to football and basketball, which is the practice after school rather than parts of the curriculum, or it may be organized by club activities, such as a very small involved or parts of school. Some dedicated debaters attend tournaments without any school support at all. Those through this, only the option in which they can have an active location or regional debate circuit, and debaters can earn enough money to attend national tournaments, because those things are very expensive. LD was introduced to national tournament in 1980. It was became a ubiquitous feature in high school debate tournaments since. Tournaments of champions began held in LD district divisions in 1985 through 1986 in their seasons. Okay, that it's found an interest of being in the alternative or existing policy debates. And these policy debates are usually what we talk about, whether the government is doing what they are supposed to do or what they're not supposed to be doing. And those are, those can be up and down. Excuse me. It can be up and down and up and down, all depending on what policy you choose, okay? So let me give you another example, okay? It is the attempt to resolve truth or false or the desirability or the undesirability of a size. Typically through non-mandates case is divided into two frameworks, which outlines the conditions of deciding resolution and the contents. The most official, the most cases attempts to determine the resolutional action achieves is in accordance with a value or criteria. The criteria can also be the standard, which in a way can attain or qualify the value. Okay, the value is inherited by the resolution. Resolved, a just government should provide health care to its citizens. Or resolved, a victim's deliberate use of deadly force is a just response to repeating domestic violence. In both cases, the value would be just or most essentially identified valiant, because the resolution is asking whether taking a certain action would confirm to be principle. Morally, it is the most common value due to its intents in many resolutions, following by justice, social welfare, and other values depending on the topic. Okay? So now that you know that, this is how, I mean, there's more to it than that, but I'm going to go ahead and skip down to it. And this is about how it's being judged, okay? Judges fall under many categories. The most common is which is lay judges, a judge that does not have experience in debate of any form and is usually only there to fill a spot for a team that needs to bring more judges or particular to be based in a slow argument. Flow judge, a judge who seems to minimize interest in a round or accepts progressive Lincoln Douglas strategies, understanding, spreading, and votes only off of the arguments of the flow. This is the most common type of judge to see in the national circuit. Classical or traditional judges look strongly on the ethics of the case and the philosophies is being behind it, especially when it comes to the value structure. They will not look highly upon the spread, which is the debate term for speed reading during speeches, or progressive debates tactics like counterplans or conducts. Policy judges, on the other hand, look at all forms of arguments, including those that come from policy debates. Policy judges tend to be flow judges as well, and are very open to spread and progressive debates tactics. For example, counterattacks and canucks. Okay? So as you go back and forth between these debates, you have, this is how Lincoln Douglas debate is set up. The basic schedule line is the affirmative has 6 minutes. The affirmative construction has 6 minutes. Okay? And then I'll explain this once I'm finished with it. Then the cross examiner has 3 minutes. Then the negative, which would be the cross examiner, has 7 minutes. Then the affirmative has 3 minutes to cross examine the negative. Then the first affirmative rebuttal is 4 minutes. 6 minutes we'll have the negative rebuttal, and then the affirmative has the last rebuttal. Okay, so let me explain it. Okay, so first off, there's an affirmative and there is a negative. Affirmative is saying, I agree whatever the resolution is, or oppose the resolution, and the negative shows that the action does not confirm the principle of that the affirmative has shown, has it been done so. Okay, so basically what it's saying is this, the negative has to disprove the affirmative. Okay, so the first 6 minutes, the affirmative reads his pre-written case or pre-written speech. Then the negative asks the affirmative questions about the affirmative case. He's got 3 minutes to do that. That's the cross-examination. Then the negative almost always reads a pre-written case and also always moves to address the affirmative case in all 7 minutes. So he gets the negative. That's the first time the negative gets to read his first case, and he also has the first time to rebuttal what the affirmative said about the written case the affirmative said, and also to try to talk about the questions that was asked to him. The 3 minutes, the affirmative will ask questions about the negative cases, okay, and then after that, he flows into a four-minute rebuttal. And so this rebuttal, the affirmative addresses both his or her opponent's case and his own case. He speaks in concern by many debaters to be the most difficult. Then the negative has its second rebuttal. The second rebuttal was 6 minutes. The negative addresses the agreement of the previous speech and summarizes the round for the judge. Then the affirmative has three minutes to do his second rebuttal. The affirmative addresses the affirmative argument of the previous speech and summarizes the round for the judge. So I'm going to put this in, and I'm going to put this up for everybody in the group. In the chat room, so you understand what I'm talking about. Not using that one. I will have to save it and then send it later because I'm not on it. Okay. So now that we understand that, so we're gonna go and we're gonna talk about some words. Okay. Let's first explain an argument, okay? An argument is a controversial statement frequently called a claim, supported by the evidence and a warrant. The standards of a logistic good argument includes acceptability, reliance, and sufficiency. Arguments, for example, an argument can be supported by association between specific examples or general rules. Arguments of ad nims are a policy that allows the arguer to attack the person's credit or background without any reliant claim. Argument sphere, a community within which the argument is being made. So when the affirmative is first reading his case, he is building a fear or a attitude around his case that will, or a bubble, per se, that cannot be broken, that he would assume to be cannot be broken, but the negative comes and asks him questions about his case. What is a case? One or more arguments sufficient to support a proposition. Cause and effect propositions. A proposition that has access that one object causes a specific outcome. What's a claim? A controversial statement of an argument that supports using reason. Claims are divided into four general categories. Defining deception, descriptions, and relativeness, and evidence. Okay? So you've got to have all of those things. You've got to be able to define what you're talking about. You've got to have a description of what you're talking about. You have to have something that relates to it, and then you have to have evidence about it. So when you do a counter plan is a plan that proposed by the negative team as an alternate to the affirmative plan. So you will say, the affirmative likes grass because he says the grass is green. Well, I feel that the grass would be green if there was no oxygen or did not do any type of scientific blah, blah, blah. Okay, photosynthesis. So that would be a counter plan to that. Okay, and so a cross-examination is a period during the debate when a member of one team asks the questions of members of the opposing team. Disassociation, an argument that creates new categories by dividing an old category into two new ones. So the affirmative or the negative could take somebody's case and says, okay, he wants to talk about grass, but what about trees? Trees grow out of the ground as well. So now the persons or the team broke it up into saying, well, we can't only just talk about stuff that grows out of ground. We got to talk about grass because that grass that grows out of ground. We got to talk about trees too because trees will be affected just as well. Okay? What's evidence? Evidence is the different types of information, facts, statistics, theories, opinions, or narratives that are used to support arguments. Evidence can be divided into two categories, that relating to reality, facts, theories, are the perceptions, and that relates to the perception, the value hierarchy, or the value categories. Now, everybody's heard this word before. Guilt by association. It is a fallacious argument that occurs when a person's argument is attacked using that a person's association with groups and people rather than using issues permeated to the argument. So we see now I've given you education. You've heard this stuff before, but you really don't really understand it. So these are where it's coming from, okay? These are where these coming from. And there's a lot of more different terms. I'm trying to look at some that might pop out at me. Status quo, you ever heard that word, status quo? Is the course of the action currently pursued, the present system. So the status quo, if you didn't know what that means, is Obamacare is the status quo when Obamacare was not around at that point in time years ago. What's a warrant? A warrant is the state or the unstated reasonings process for examples of relationships between evidence and the claims. So now, if anybody would like to call in for any questions, I know you guys might think this is a little boring, but it's important because we talk about how to speak to people, how to try to understand an argument and why people do debates on TV and what's their purpose of everything. Well, these are the reasons, okay? All right. So now that we know about Lincoln Douglas debate, which I love, and I can't wait till Mr. David K. come on here, we're going to talk about a movie, okay? And this movie is called The Great Debaters, okay? And this movie was, let me pull it up. Okay, so The Great Debaters was a 2008 American film, all right? It was produced by Oprah Winfrey and starred Denzel Washington, also co-starring Forest Whitaker, Nathan Parks, Denzel Washington, Jermaine Williams, and Junie Stepman, okay? The film was released in theaters in December 2007. So this was the plot. Based on a true story, the plot resolves around an effective debate coach, Melvin B. Tyson, the historical black Wiley College that was placed his team on the equal foot with whites in the American South during 1930. While Jim Crow laws were common and lynch mobs were in a persuasive fear for blacks. In this movie, Wiley team eventually succeeded the point where they were able to debate Harvard University. This was their 47th annual debate team. The movie also explores the social construction in Texas during the Great Depression, including not only the day-to-day insults and the slights of black America endure, but also a lynching. Okay? So let me give you, let me pull this up, Great Debaters. The movie was very inspirational. It had a lot of movement in it. And when I said a lot of movement, I'm talking about a lot of emotional movement that made you really think about yourself. And there was one part of the movie, and I'm not talking about the movie just yet. Because it's so enriched with hatred that it was hard to it was really hard to swallow, because as a man you got to just sit back and accept it because you want to protect your family. So Whitaker. Okay, so, and then I'm about to describe sorry for the absence of speaking, but I want to make sure that I get the part that I want up on here. But okay, so this is actually from the Wiley College .edu, and they're historical. College, where are they out of? They are out of, let's see, Lord Jesus.
They are out of, let's see, where are they at? Where are they at? Oh, excuse me. I apologize. I usually have it all done. Okay. So, Wiley College is a four-year private supported historical black university located in West side of Marshall, Texas. Wiley College holds distinctions of one of the most oldest historical black colleges west of the Mississippi. So, as you see, they're located in Marshall, Texas. All right. So, this is a story, okay, about them. Let's see. Like I said, in 1924, Melvin Tolson accepted the position as an instructor of English and speech at the college. He taught, wrote poetry and novels. He coached football, directed plays. Let's see. He started the debate team in 1929, was established 10-year winning streak. The debate team beat the larger black schools of its day, like Tuskegee, Fricks, and Howard. After a visit to Texas, Langston Hughes wrote that Marvin Tolson is the most famous Negro professor in the Southwest. Students all over the parts of the world speak of him, revive him, remember him, and love him. According to James Farmer, Tolson drove in and he extreme risks. Okay? So in 1935, he led the debate team to a national tournament that defeated the University of Southern California before an audience of 11,000 people. In 1949, he was appointed the poet laureus of Liberia by President V.S. Tubman. He left Wiley and to become a professional professor of English and drama at the Langston University in Oklahoma. That's pretty awesome. Now, let's get to the movie. The movie's intense. If you hadn't seen the movie, Lord Jesus, please go rent it. It's called The Great Debaters. Great movie. Great movie. And like I said, it is one of those things where you've got it takes you back a minute. Takes you back a minute. Because there's things in there that make you question where we are today. And I'm not saying like question like black people and where we are today, but question how did black people be able to control themselves and conduct themselves in a manner that would have allowed them to continue to be who they were, I would say, to say that. Okay? It's coming up. It's really deep because I'm looking at this this show and I'm saying to myself, oh my goodness, this is some stuff right here. Okay? And when these people get together, they all have different ideas and different knowings of who they are, and there's a point in time where the young man, his name is James Foster Jr. and James Foster Sr. are on the street, and the father, James, supposedly hits this pig. Supposedly hits this pig. And these gentlemen jump out. These white gentlemen jump out and they degrade the black man. Now he's a preacher, he's a minister, he's very, on his side of the track, very respected, very educated, everything. But because he was black, he was still treated. You remember when Mr. Nash talked about how the black people were millionaires, maybe even billionaires, and Black Wall Street happened in Tulsa, okay? I mean, that's basically what happened. And there was another part of the movie where these gentlemen, when I say gentlemen, they had these people, they were lynching a man, and Denzel Washington and his debaters were going to a debate, and they were on the dark roads, and they so happened to roll up on this man being lynched, being burned, and he tells the children to get down, and he backs up. Traumatizes the kids, just completely traumatizes the kids. They know it. They know it's bad, but for them to feel like they were treated worse because the color of their skin, they really didn't feel like they had any type of control. What kind of love is that? Now, these kids were phenomenal debaters, okay? Phenomenal debaters. And when they went and they began to debate at the beginning of the movie, you know how movies are. They always got to build it up, you know, make them seem like they don't have it and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, then at the end, they get it. Well, they had the youngest. James? What's his name? James. James. That was Forrest Whitaker's little son. Okay. Well, we're about to find out how old he was. Did not know that. But see, how old was he? He was 14. He was 14 when he was at Wiley College. He enrolled in Wiley College. 14 years old as a debater, and one of the most significant debaters on the team. And just marvelous of how things just happen. Well, I really don't have much to say about that. So I'm going to go ahead and call it a night, but I thank my listeners for listening to me, and next time I hear you, you should be sounding off.